Hi, everybody. I'm Beauty Code Redos, and welcome, welcome again to the Ask Beauty Show. And the Beatles are not alone these days more than ever. People are really, really feeling down. In fact, I was actually reading a new study by the U.S. Census Bureau that recently reported that a third of Americans these days show signs of clinical depression and anxiety, and these and other mental conditions are becoming amplified, not surprising, during the recent pandemic. Well, COVID-19 patients and their families are also at high risk to develop depression and anxiety and also a number of other physical problems. So typically, pre-pandemic, the statistics were telling us that 16 million adults in the United States, which translated into 1 in 5 Americans, were suffering from clinical depression. So here we have now 1 in 3 Americans. And what about anxiety? We're looking at 40 million adults are suffering from a variety of different anxiety disorders. And people these days, and I'm seeing this in my practice, I'm hearing this from colleagues and from friends, people are really having a very, very difficult time. I mean, look what is going on politically. We have an absolutely crazy man as president of the United States, and I've been reading the polls, and I, like many, many progressives, are extremely concerned that he might actually win a second term. And people are also so concerned, and for good reason. Economically, people have lost their jobs. I had a chiropractor appointment this morning, and I was in a VIA, and I was looking at all the stores that have closed, and this is on the Upper East Side in New York City. People are concerned about health care benefits. People who are lucky enough to have health care benefits are really worried whether or not their benefits will indeed cover a potential catastrophic illness or illnesses in the family. And look at the racism in this country. Look at what is happening with police brutality. And, you know, I really wonder, you know, we can talk about the problems and we can talk about racism and we can talk about the lack of mental health accessibility. And in the final analysis, we all have to make a decision about what are we going to do? Are we going to rant and are we going to rave about the conditions in this country, or are we going to find ourselves connected perhaps to some social movement where we can actually be doing something, taking positive action? And hopefully our positive action is going to translate into really, really being able to make a difference. And, you know, I'm hearing from people all the time, am I going to be able to pay my rent? I'm now unemployed. I've been unemployed for the last 6 months. I have a child. I have a spouse, and I'm not sure whether or not moving forward I'm going to get a new job. And what am I going to do to be able to deal with day-to-day needs, day-to-day financial issues and financial concerns? Am I going to be able to get a new job? So many businesses are closing down. What is my life going to be like as a result of the pandemic? You know, for parents these days, it's a real quandary. Should I send my children to school? Should I send my children to daycare? Is sending my children to school 50% of the time, is that going to protect them, or is that going to put them at risk? And these are the kinds of issues that people are dealing with every single day, over and above the pre-pandemic concerns about family, about relationships, about sex. So this is a time, my friends, that we are really having to reflect on our lives and our relationships and really reevaluate. I think we're having to reevaluate everything and hopefully find a really positive way to reset. I've been reading that self-help hotline calls are surging, and I see that as something really, really positive, that people are realizing that they do not need to navigate this particularly challenging time in our lives alone. I've also been reading that there's been a substantial increase in alcohol consumption, in wine. People are eating more and exercising less. So this is a very, very difficult time for all of us. And yet, we have to find ways to be able to go on with our lives despite all of the adjustments and readjustments that we are all having to make. But on a more positive note, I found a wonderful, wonderful article, and I always like to read about and find out about what people who are doing well in their lives around the world, what are they doing? What differentiates people who do well despite the ups and downs of life as compared to people who continue to suffer? So this is a piece that I really want to share with you. This is a Japanese secret to a longer and happier life. And this secret apparently is gaining attention from millions of people around the world. So what is the secret? So in Japanese, Aiki means to live, and Gai, G-A-I, means reason. So in other words, your reason to live, your raison d'être. And this ideology dates to the Heian period, but only in the past decade has it gained attention from millions of people around the world. So apparently the Aikigai way of life is especially prominent in Okinawa. And for those of you who've been listening to the Ask Beattie show, in fact, today is the 312th show that I've been doing here on the Progressive Radio Network. What we know about people in Okinawa is that they live longer than almost anyone on Earth. Of course, their diets are really wonderful, and they have strong social networks, and they have a purpose, and they feel that they're making a difference. So I really wanted to share with you what the people in Okinawa actually do on a day-to-day basis that makes their lives meaningful, and of course also contributes to their tremendous, tremendous longevity. So in a 2009 TED Talk called How to Live to Be 100, and I think we all want to know the secret to be healthy and to be able to live a long life, award-winning journalist Dan Buettner, he explores the lifestyle traits of five places in the world where people live the longest. And of all the blue zones, as Buettner defines them, the Okinawans have the highest life expectancy. And this has been talked about for decades. So in America, think about this. we divide our adult life into two categories, our work life and our retirement life. And of course, I'm surprised that is what is not included is our family life, our relationship life. But nonetheless, okay, according to Dan Buettner, in America, we have our work life and our retirement life. Now, in Okinawa, there isn't even a word for retirement. And I tell my husband, Jim, every single day that I never want to hear and I never want to talk about the possibility of retirement. I mean, I'm certainly hoping to be able to do my psychotherapy and sex therapy and be in the media until I'm 150. But, you know, that's certainly my hope that I want for myself. And I know that there are a lot of people, probably people who really have not been as fortunate as I, who don't like their jobs and would like nothing more than to be able to not work. But I am certainly not one of these people. So in Okinawa, we know that there is not a word for retirement. Instead, there's simply this word, ikigai, which essentially means the reason for which you wake up in the morning. And that is something that is so important, to find our purpose. What is the reason or the reasons that we really want to wake up every single morning? So Dan Buettner cites the ikigai of several Okinawans. For example, for a 101-year-old fisherman, it was catching fish for his family three times a week. That was his reason, that was his goal, and that was his purpose. And for a 102-year-old woman, it was holding her tiny great-great-great-granddaughter, which she said was like leaping into heaven. So that was her raison d'etre. That was her reason for wanting to be alive and be active and get up every morning, for the expectation that she would be holding her great-great-great-granddaughter. And for a 102-year-old karate master, it was teaching martial arts. So I'm going to ask you, okay, what is your reason and purpose for getting up every single day, every single morning? And for those of you who may not have a purpose, may not have a goal, I mean, this is really something that is so important that we all figure out. And if you're not sure, and if you don't feel you could figure out this quandary that you probably have on your own, the very best thing that you can do is reach out and ask for help, whether or not it is with a therapist or somebody who you really trust or an elder, because I think that for all of us, we need a purpose in our lives. Otherwise, you know, the days and the months and the years go by, and with a purpose, it really gives us all a reason to go on and a reason to live despite the ups and downs that we all go through. So for years, researchers have tried to find the reasons behind a long and healthy life. And well, the answer is likely, obviously, it is a mix of good genes and diet and exercise. Studies have suggested that finding meaning in life is also a key component. So there was a study, a 2008 study from Tohoku University, and researchers analyzed data from more than 50,000 participants ages 40 to 79. And what did they find? Well, they found that those who reported having this akike, the purpose for getting out of bed every single morning in their lives, had reduced risks of cardiovascular diseases and lower mortality rates. And put it another way, 95% of respondents who had aikige were still alive 7 years after the initial survey, compared to the 83% who didn't. So maybe it's art, maybe it's volunteering, maybe it's going back to school, maybe it is connecting these days online with groups. Maybe it's listening to a variety of different kinds of podcasts or taking up a new hobby. But one thing for sure is that we all need to find a reason, a really positive reason and purpose for getting up every single day. And if that eludes you, or may have eluded you for a long, long time, today is a terrific day to make the decision. You know, you're listening to my show, you're listening to the results of the research, to do something really positive for yourself today. It'll be interesting. It'll be very interesting to hear from you, especially from people who may be very depressed or anxious, or who've given up, who do not feel that there really is a reason to live, even though they may not be suicidal, to see what kind of a purpose, what kind of a reason for living can you actually come up with. And you may be so wonderfully surprised if you do that homework, and who knows exactly what you are going to discover that will give you that raison d'etre for living. You know, it's impossible to tell whether or not this aikige guarantees longevity. I mean, we know that there is nothing and no one who can guarantee longevity in life through this single study, but the findings suggest again and again that having a purpose can encourage one to build a happy and active life. So how do you go about finding your inner aikige? Well, they say that there's no single way, but you can start by asking yourself a few simple questions. Okay, question number one, and you may not know the answer, but these are certainly questions that you can ponder. What makes you happy? Is it children? Is it art? Is it gardening? I mean, for each of us, that answer is going to be a different answer. Question number two, what are you good at? What do you really, really enjoy doing? And you may very well be able to build at something, at some skill, at some interest that you are all really, really good at. And what and who do you value? What do you value? Who do you value? Maybe you can partner with someone who you really admire and value, and you can collaborate together on a project of some kind. And what motivates you to get up in the morning? And you may not have any of these answers at the moment, but these are some of the questions that we all need to ponder. And according to this study, finding your aikige, it's going to take some time. The secret that Dan Buettner often tells people is to learn the five core pillars of aikige. And let's talk about what these five pillars are. So number one is starting small. For example, artisanal farmers devote all their time and efforts into creating the best and tastiest produce. They get the soil right, they prune and water their products with care, and their sense of starting small propels them to go incredible, incredible lengths. Number two, releasing yourself. What does that mean? But when you release yourself, you're able to let go of your obsessions and see things that really matter to you in a more positive, clear, and positive light. Because practicing self-acceptance is vital to this particular pillar, and yet it's also one of the most difficult tasks that we all face in our own lives. But if you can, if we can really overcome this obstacle and be happy with who we are, it can be an incredibly rewarding experience. And of course, you know, I talk about this all the time, that if we are finding we have skeletons in the closet and unfinished business having to do with our early life, with our parents or earlier relationships, how important it is that we commit to emotionally working through what did and did not happen, even though we can't change our histories at all, so that we're finally, finally able to release ourselves, and what I talk about, really being able to live in the moment without having one foot in the past and one foot in the present. Because it's very, very difficult to feel joyful and happy and enjoy one's life when you have a lot of unfinished business, old depression, sexual abuse, abuse that occurred when you were a child, whether or not it was physical abuse or emotional abuse or verbal abuse. Because I hear in my practice, you know, all the time that people are finding it so difficult to really deal with the present and live in the moment when they have all these skeletons in the closet that are constantly, constantly popping out seemingly from nowhere, that really get in the way of our lives and our relationships. And of course, that's really step number one. We need to be okay. And if we are feeling depressed, and if we are feeling anxious, and if we don't know why, you know, this is the primary reason why I love to do the Ask Beauty Show. And I have had and hosted many, many call-in counseling radio talk shows in mainstream media, because I want people to really give themselves permission. It's not enough for me to give people permission, but what's even more important is for people to give themselves permission and reach out and ask for help when life just starts to be too difficult and too challenging. And, you know, I say this every single week. It doesn't mean that you need to be in therapy or counseling, you know, for the rest of your life, but, you know, just being able to release your feelings in an authentic way. Because so often, you know, you'll ask somebody, well, you know, how are you feeling? And whether or not they're feeling well or badly or depressed or anxious, we're almost conditioned in this society to say, oh, yes, I'm feeling good. Everything is wonderful. My career is great. My love life is terrific. When in fact, beneath the surface, the opposite is true. Now, obviously, you're not going to be sharing your innermost feelings, you know, with strangers. But if you are carrying around a lot of baggage, if you are carrying around a lot of angst, it is very, very difficult to be able to enjoy your life. And of course, it is always going to be affecting our physical well-being as well. So the third thing that we need to strive for is harmony and sustainability. And you can't, none of us, we cannot achieve our goals if we're constantly fighting with the people around you, which is why I talk about a zero toxicity policy, certainly in my life when it comes to people. Because cultivating and maintaining a sense of community, positive community, provides us with a strong, strong support system to carry us through life's most challenging moments. You know, so I ask you, you know, you may have a lot of friends, you may have colleagues, and you may have a lot of acquaintances, but are the people in your life, including family, including your partner perhaps, are they people that are positive and loving, and that they respect you even when you are going through ups and downs? And that's not to suggest at all that there are not going to be difficulties in the best of relationships, but you have to really be honest with yourself and look at the people in your life. And of course, I ask the question all the time, you know, who needs to go? Who actually needs to go? I mean, I have patients where they have family members that are so toxic, they've been toxic right from the beginning, and yet guilt and a sense of obligation oftentimes keeps people into very, very toxic relationships, which will always, always have a very, very adverse effect on us emotionally and psychologically and physically as well. So that you're having to, you know, this research is asking all of us to be very, very honest with ourselves. And the fourth thing, so we need to release ourselves. We have to make sure that we find ourselves are surrounded with people where there is harmony and sustainability. And then the goal also is to find joy in small things. Small things, and finding joy in the small things. You know, the morning air. How many of you, you know, get up and on a beautiful day, look at the sky and look at the trees, or are truly, truly able to enjoy a cup of coffee or a ray of sunshine? And these kinds of small things, the joy of small things, it should really be a part of what motivates all of us to get up every morning. So you have to really ask yourself, you know, are you in a positive place in your life? Do you feel that you really have a purpose for living, not just a purpose for existing? And if you don't, the ultimate question, of course, is what are you going to do about it? And pre-pandemic, I was one of these people who said, look, don't spend a lot of time on the computer, and I'm with all of these various different groups and social networks and listening to podcasts. But things have really, really changed. And I think that however we are all able to find a sense of connection and a community, whether or not it is online or not, that is what is going to help to really nurture us and nourish us emotionally and psychologically and also physically, So that for a lot of people who are home and who are working for, from home, you know, after the work hours, if you happen to be somebody who is alone, where you don't have a family and you don't have a partner and you don't have children, you know, I really do encourage you to find groups, to find social groups where you're able to connect and communicate in an authentic way, and to also find groups, you know, where you share similar kinds of interests, whether or not it's art, whether or not it's cooking, so that you are not going to feel and that you are not going to be alone. Now, the other thing that I found really interesting, and I have never been a gardener, is that this Dan Buettner, who was talking about his research in the area of blue zones, where the Okinawans happen to live the longest of virtually anybody in this world, he found out something else that I thought was very, very interesting. And that is that gardening could help you live longer. And I have never gardened in my life, but I found that this article was actually very, very interesting. So why gardening? It actually gets you into nature, which, of course, is a wonderful thing for all of us. Exposure to sunlight and fresh air and plant life all have health benefits. So even if you've never done it, even if you could never imagine that you could really get into gardening, if for no other reason, you're outside and it's beautiful. And who could feel depressed in the sunlight and when you're breathing in fresh air? So what did doctors actually find about this? Well, doctors in Scotland prescribe nature walks for high blood pressure and anxiety. And they also encourage patients to interact with the surroundings, whether that means bird watching or collecting twigs, just getting outside, just moving, taking in the beauty around us, living in the moment, even if it is for only short periods of time every single day. So there was another famous study, and this was a study that was done in 1984. And there was an environmental researcher, Roger Ulrich. He found, what did he find? That patients who had their gallbladders removed recovered faster and with less pain medication. You're not even going to believe this, but this is what Roger Ulrich found. If their hospital rooms looked out on nature rather than just a brick wall. Of course, it makes sense, because nature really is restorative, because we have a kind of biologically prepared disposition to respond favorably to nature, because we actually evolved in nature. So if being around nature is good for you, and you know yourself, if you're outside and you're feeling depressed and you take a walk and you look at the trees and you look at the sky and you look at the birds, it's really, really hard, even if you're feeling extremely depressed, to not feel a little bit better, even if it is for a short period of time. So if being around nature is good for you, and I think that that's pretty clear, then being consistent about it is even better, which is something that gardening pretty much forces you to do. It gets you outside. And you may try to jog every day in the park, but then blow it off for a few weeks when your schedule gets too busy. But if you stop tending, when you think about it, when you stop tending to a garden midway, however, you're liable to see all your hard work go to waste as weeks take over everything. And it's nice you are able to actually connect with the creativity, with your own creativity, as you're starting to see things bloom and blossom. And because is gardening, a lot of people believe that gardening is kind of like being involved in a triathlon. Well, it's not exactly the same, of course, but it really does, it forces us to move. And I think these days so many people are sedentary, particularly people who are working from home. They sit and sit and sit at the computer looking at the screen. And we all know that exercise is particularly important for us psychologically and also physically. Because when you think about it, the working in a garden, I mean, it does. It restores dexterity and strength. And the aerobic exercise involved, and there is a lot of aerobic exercise, can easily use the same number of calories as might be expended in a gym. Well, maybe not the same number of calories, but it's really at least you're moving. And number three, you're going to eat what you grow, which is fun. It's actually fun to see that your hard work is materializing with something beautiful and nutritious, and that you're going to be able to eat it. So this study, I just want to share with you, you know, we're looking at the world's longest living people. I think that we are all very, very interested in trying to know what they do so that we can actually emulate their lifestyle. And that's one of the beauties about good research, is looking at, you know, what works and what doesn't work. And I think that that's also something that we need to do with ourselves on a fairly regular basis. If we're looking at our lives and we're looking at our relationships, it's really important to know what is working. And if you're doing a lot of things that are working, then you need to continue to do them. But if you're finding that some of the things, whether or not it is eating too much or drinking too much or not getting enough sleep or not exercising or engaging with toxic people in toxic situations, if you're able to really sit down with yourself and figure this out, then the task becomes, are you committed? Are you committed to acknowledging, addressing, and resolving? And that means making changes, and that means taking some real concerted action to actually get to where you want to go. And I think it is. I think it's very important for all of us to take a look at our lives and our relationships, personal relationships and business and professional relationships, and be honest with ourselves and ask ourselves what is working and what is not working. And the things that are not working, are we going to be committed to begin to make some small changes? You know, I'm thinking about a patient that I actually treated a couple of years ago. She was in a very, very up and down kind of a relationship. You know, she would tell me 1 week things were going really well, the next week things were really off track, and she had never really had the confidence to be able to sit down with her partner and take a look at and talk about the things that were not working for her. And she had been abandoned as a young child, and I know that she really feared that there would be further abandonment in this relationship that she was in. But the good news was is that she finally found the courage, I'd like to think with my support. And her boyfriend was actually very surprised to hear that she was so upset about so many different things because she never expressed them before. And, you know, one of the things that's really true for all of us is that nobody is a mind reader. So that if we have things that we need to communicate to our children, to our partners, to our colleagues, to our bosses, it is our obligation to find the time, the place, the words to be able to engage in that kind of a conversation. Because a lot of people believe that, oh, well, he should know or she should know. And yet, you know, people are very busy and very self-absorbed to a very, very large degree. And this is how couples really tend to get off track. They let this go and they let that go. And my suggestion, and I have treated many, many, many hundreds of couples over the past 35 plus years, is that when issues start to arise, regardless of how uncomfortable you may feel, regardless of how difficult the issues are, it is so important. It is so important to be able to say to your partner, listen, darling, I love you very much. There are some things that I need to talk with you about that have been bothering me and so many people, the couples that I have worked with over the years. The one common denominator with, I would say, over 90% of the couples is that they waited and waited and waited, and things that had happened in year number one or year number two were just put under the carpet. So by the time they were together, if they were still together after 25 years or more, there was just so many issues that had never, ever, ever been talked about, and yet they simmered in one or both of the people. And that's the task, and that's the challenge, is that if you have something on your mind, again, you don't want to do it when you're running out of the door to go to work, if you're lucky enough to still have a job and you're actually going somewhere, and you certainly don't want to have these kinds of discussions before you go to bed at night, but to be able on a regular basis to be able to, as I say, to cross the T's and dot the I's so that weeks and months and years are not going to go by when you are feeling so angry and disappointed and upset, because this is what really can destroy and does destroy relationships. So, you know, I'm hoping that you will take this to heart. And I'm not suggesting that this is an easy thing to do, but if you are in a relationship and there are a lot of things that that you feel are off track and you have not been able alone and with your partner to be able to successfully resolve the conflicts. I mean, this is a perfect example, you know, where couples are able to reach out, and sometimes just with a few sessions, of course, sometimes it takes a lot longer than a few sessions, people are finally able to talk about the problems and, of course, find ways to resolve issues, because that's really what it is about. It is not about denying. It's not about blaming. But it is about how can we come together as a couple or as a family to deal with the tough issues and find a variety of ways to resolve the problems. You know, it's just such a pity that we don't learn any of this in school. I mean, when I think about when I was a child, you know, math and science, I mean, nobody talked about problem solving, nobody talked about communication or our relationships. I think we've done a little bit of a better job over the last many years, but for me, these subjects are priority subjects, and when we're left to our own devices to figure things out on our own. We are not doing a very, very good job. And you know what's interesting, too, is that we have so many relationship podcasts, and we have relationship shows, and we have relationship articles. And people these days, I think more than ever, have given themselves permission to talk about relationships and domestic violence and abuse. And yet, each week here on the Ask Beady Show, I'm sometimes startled myself when I look at the statistics. I mean, when you're looking at divorce, so we still have a 48% divorce rate for first marriages. And for second marriages, that number goes up to 67%. And one would hope after a divorce, your first divorce, your second divorce, that you would have found a way to figure out a better way to have a relationship. And yet, when you look at third marriages, the divorce rate is 74%. So what's happening with all the podcasts and the self-help books and articles and shows on relationships? You know, what is it that we are missing, or what is it that people are not taking in or are not actually prepared to do some work on themselves and in learning about healthy relationships, that these statistics continue to really skyrocket? I mean, I look at the suicide statistics, and the suicide statistics are really going up. I mean, suicide attempts by young people quadrupled over the past 6 years. Since 2011, there's been a 40% increase nationally by self-poisoning by young people. And I talked to a number of young people who are so concerned. Of course, young people and old people, everybody's online and looking at the likes and looking, you know, at the numbers of followers that they have or they don't have. And I mean, I look at these statistics, and it's very, very frightening. The suicide rate amongst kids ages 10 to 24 increased by 56%. So, I mean, needless to say, we have a lot of problems in our society. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention, you know, what's going on in the world of domestic violence. Homicides by intimate partners increased by 26% from 2010 to 2017. Four women are killed every day by their partner. So we have a lot of social problems in this country. And yet, when I look at the newscasts, as I frequently do on CNN and MSNBC, and people are talking about Trump, and we're talking about the pathology in our country, it's very, very rare that I hear people actually doing psychological analysis and commentary about hard news. And this is also something that I feel that the media is very, very remiss about. And I was actually one of the first people, I think I was the first person in the country, who diagnosed Donald Trump as having a narcissistic personality disorder. And it's not something that was not serious. His behavior, the symptoms were all so very clear. And I know that there are groups, professional groups, who say, how can you possibly diagnose somebody if you haven't, you know, seen them face to face? But we saw the psychopathology, or I think that many people saw the psychopathology, look at what happened. We turned the other way, and here we had a a tyrant, an autocrat, a Hitler, in my opinion, who was elected. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, there are many, many, many very smart progressive people who are extremely concerned that despite the damage and the collateral damage that has occurred in the last 4 years, that he may indeed be reelected. And I mean, I feel that on so many of the programs, we have to clinically expose what this man is and what he has done and what he is really capable of doing if he is reelected. But we don't really hear very much of any psychological analysis and commentary, you know, on the news. So, look, this is a tough time for, I would say, the majority of people, and yet we have to find ways every single day to wake up and find a purpose. And as I remind you almost every week, that science has offered a simple and effective way to bolster our own emotional health, even though we may be going through some very, very difficult times. And that is to help ourselves, to start by helping others. And it actually really does make a very, very big difference. I mean, I have found myself, when I've gone through challenges in my life, being able to wake up and knowing that I was going to be able to work with people and help people effectively deal with their emotional problems and their psychological issues and their relationship problems. It really had a very, very positive effect on me and on my life and on my mood. And I think this is where volunteering is something that we should all consider. I mean, it doesn't have to be an intensive, emotional kind of a volunteer experience, but giving back, finding ways that we can make a difference in our society. Of course, it's important to vote. It's important to register to vote. It's important to have some cause, some passion. Again, it goes back to, you know, what I was talking about at the beginning of the show, to have a purpose to wake up every single morning. And that's something, again, if you're not sure what your purpose is, or if you feel that you're living a meaningless and a purposeless life, that should be, and could become, you know, a really number one priority, to figure out how to better engage, in life, and what kind of a positive, meaningful difference, you know, can you make in somebody else's life, even though you may be feeling very, very low yourself. You know, I have one patient who's been clinically depressed for, I would say, most of her life, and she volunteers with Make-A-Wish. And when she visits the families and when she visits the young children, who many have only a few years left to live, you know, she's able, and she tells me this herself, even though life has not gone exactly the way she had hoped it was going to go, it really gives her another perspective, another sense of reality that, yes, her life has not been great, and yet look at these young children and look at the families and look at the suffering that these people, you know, are having to deal with, and that in the Make-A-Wish Foundation, you know, doing some small thing that can really, really have a major impact on a person's life can really put a smile on our own faces as well. So, You know, I think that during these very tumultuous and difficult and depressing times, we have to dig in very, very deep into ourselves. And again, if we're finding that we're just going to very, very dark places and we can't seem to find a way out, I really encourage all of you to reach out and ask for help. And of course, you can, you know, find me and all my contact information through the Progressive Radio Network and on the BeattyCohn.com website. And I'm sitting in my office here on the Upper West Side in New York City. I cannot believe that an hour has come and gone. And I want to just leave you with my two weekly messages. And the first message is that we all need to do everything that we can possibly do to find ways, to find purpose, to find meaning, and to find a way to really love ourselves. And sometimes that's a real, real challenge. And as I, you know, tell you every single week, you don't need to navigate these challenging times and these challenging paths on your own. And secondly, of course, we all need to do a much, much, much better way to find ways to love each other and to get involved. And it's just easy to sit back and say how terrible this is and how horrible that is, but to find a way. I mean, for some people, it may be politically, for other people, it may be socially, to find a way so that you can feel that you are contributing in some, maybe in very small ways, to improve our society. And in doing so, I guarantee you that you are definitely going to start to feel you know, better yourself. So again, everybody, as you know, the Ask Beattie Show today is the 312th Ask Beattie Show that I've been doing here on the Progressive Radio Network. And I really want to thank all of you for tuning in every week. I know that you have a lot of other things to do, a lot of other options and podcasts. And I appreciate your comments. I appreciate your going to the Progressive Radio Network archives. That's the Ask Beattie Podbean archive, where you're actually able to listen to the 312 shows that I have done up to this date. So I think that we're not going to be having a show next Monday. Next Monday is Labor Day. But I do wish you a good rest of the day. And I'm really looking forward to your continuing to tune in, and your continuing to text me and email me with a variety of different kinds of questions. We can debate, we can discuss, and it's really all good. So again, thanks so much, everybody, and have a wonderful, wonderful rest of the day. And what I'm hoping and wishing for you is that you are successful at finding your purpose in life. And I'd love to hear how you are going about navigating this this challenge. So goodbye, everybody. I will talk with you next week. And I leave you with my favorite song, and that is "What the World Needs Now Is Love, Sweet Love." And boy, do we need it now more than ever. Bye-bye, everybody.